Good afternoon. It's Pat Moore, and you're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau. Welcome to Juneau Afternoon. This afternoon, we'll be talking with representatives from the UAS Certified Nurses Assistant Program. Suzanne Walter will be here with several of her students. Pam Leary from the Juneau Skating Club will come in. We'll hear from Tibetan Master Kendril Rinpoche about this weekend's workshops. And Libby Stringer will be here to let us know what's happening at the Capital City Weekly offices for the Gallery Walk. Weather looks like rain, highs around 39, southeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour, and tonight rain likely, the snow, the lows around 35, and southwest winds 10 to 20 miles per hour.
1. The Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders are attending the 2011 White House Tribal Nations Conference. Leaders from the 565 federally recognized tribes were invited to interact with the president and his administration. I spoke with reporter Matt Laszlo by cell phone, who was at the Interior Department.
This morning they were addressed by Secretaries of the Interior, Secretary of Health and Human Services, and the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. All these secretaries had a similar message to tribal leaders. They want to work with the sovereign government, but they also are saying it's a tight budget season here in Washington, so there's going to be a little bit less money going forward. So they're saying they really want to work on having better partnerships and streamlining how federal dollars reach Indian country.
And what is some of the buzz from tribal leaders that you've talked to? What are some of their concerns beyond the budget, and what are they saying about this year's summit?
Well, first off, all tribal leaders are saying this administration has really taken a lot of steps forward. So they're feeling like they have a good relationship with this administration. But a couple leaders I talked to are a little bit offended. They're saying throughout the week they expected more high-level talks instead of meeting individually with secretaries of different cabinet agencies. They were given lower people down on the list, and they said, hey, we're presidents of sovereign nations. We're leaders. They want us to be addressing high-level people. And this morning they were forced to wait outside the Department of Interior, which offended some. They said, come on, let us be treated as equals here. So there's a little bit of frustration, but trying to say there is progress being made.
And what's on the agenda today?
Later on this afternoon, President Obama will address the conference. He's expected to talk with the tribes about the way the administration is moving forward, and honestly, he'll definitely talk about his jobs bill, which he says can bring thousands of jobs to Indian country, but he's also going to talk about the budget cuts that are coming, so he'll definitely be reaffirming some of the messages from his cabinet secretaries.
That was Matt Laszlo reporting from Washington, D.C. Native leaders in Canada are calling for an investigation into health care in northern Aboriginal communities after the recent death of a baby in Manitoba. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Two-month-old Driana Ross died of pneumonia at God's Lake Narrows, a remote First Nation about 300 miles north of Winnipeg. Her parents took her three times to the community's nursing station, and each time nurses sent them home with Tylenol and reassurances that the daughter was fine. She never did get to see a doctor. Her father, Paul Ross, says he believes Driana could have been saved if the nursing station had treated his concerns more seriously.
We were the ones that were keeping her. We know when our baby's sick.
She was so pale.
She's pale, and they made a remark that she's just pale like her mother.
The baby was eventually airlifted to Thompson, Manitoba, where she died. Now Manitoba's native leaders want the federal government in Ottawa to hold a public inquiry into health care in northern First Nations communities. Michael Yellowback is the chief of the God's Lake Narrows First Nation.
And it could have been easily prevented if the medical team acted right away, rather than waiting for this baby's condition to deteriorate.
Native leaders say health care in the north is inadequate. Most reserves are served by nursing stations with chronically high staff turnovers and open only during business hours. Doctors occasionally fly into the community, otherwise they're available only by telephone. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
During this month in 2006, an appeals court ruled Kamehameha schools in Hawaii could favor Native Hawaiians after being sued over its admissions preference policy. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you can get free legal help with filing a claim at meetings held around the country through December. Details and a schedule of meetings is at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's about 5 1/2 minutes after 3. You're in tune with KTOO FM, and you've got Juno Afternoon. And I have a wonderful panoply of guests before me here. These folks who are we're going to introduce in a second here are all either students or recent graduates of the Certified Nurses Aid Program run by UAS here in Juno. So Marina Kaparis has graduated and is now employed. Annalyn Gozen is here with Carrie Cruz, Stephanie Helf. Suzanne Malter is the person who runs this program or who is in charge of the program, and she's here to talk about it a little bit too. So, Marina, let's start with you since you're now you're out in the world.
Yes,
so,
I am.
Yeah,
yep.
Where are you working?
I'm working at the Juno Pioneer Home right now.
Okay, mm-hmm. And you graduated with a certified nurse's aide. Is that a degree or is it a certification?
It's just a certification right now.
Certification,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So can you briefly describe what kind of work you do?
Yeah, I helped the residents assist with, you know, going to the bathroom, helping them change their clothes, things like that, and basically anything they need help with, and walking, getting into a wheelchair, things like that.
So. When you were 7 years old, did you think you'd do this?
No, absolutely not. I thought I was going to be like a rock star or something. Uh-huh. I don't know.
So you still have the Fender Stratocaster and the big amp?
Oh, yeah. Somewhere back in my closet.
Well, maybe you can entertain the residents at the Pioneer Home.
Yeah, I could,
on weekend or something like that. So this position came about right at the end of your training?
Yeah. They did offer some positions up, but I didn't apply right away. I kind of just sat aside and tried to figure out what I wanted to do still. But I initially took the Certified Nursing Aid program to help me figure out if I want to go into nursing to begin with. But I just applied in October, I believe, and I was recently hired in November, so.
And they evidently looked favorably on your certificate from UAS.
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, so we have Annalyn Gozen and Carrie, well, Annalyn, first of all. Can you describe, where are you in the program at this point? How far are you into the program?
Oh, yeah, in 2 weeks we're going to take our state exam.
Okay, and that gets that's the end of the...
Yeah, and then it'll be...
Okay. And how long have you been involved in the training?
Since September.
Okay, so you do this in one semester,
basically. Yeah.
And that's how many courses did you have to take? Is it all one big course?
Oh, it's just one big course, yeah,
okay.
Nine credits. So it's kind of equivalent to like 3 classes.
So do you have time to breathe or eat or
sometimes
sleep?
Sometimes.
Sleep is highly overrated. I'm told that by a number of students. Carrie Cruz... which I need to identify who is who here. So, Carrie, you're taking the certification exam, too?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. And what was it that motivated you to choose this particular specialty? You can do a lot of things at UAS. I just wonder why you chose this one.
I've always been I like alternative health. I've always studied it like a geek all on my own. So I wanted to take the CNA course to see how I liked it. And it's a good midlife career. And so now that we're almost done, I've decided I do want to go on to nursing.
Ah.
And one of the things about nursing is they have what they call traveling nurses. And I love to travel. And so my kids are grown, and I'm really looking forward to it.
So how does this this 9-hour course set into the rest of the nurses' training you'll have to do? Are you like a second semester freshman in the program? How much have you gained?
I wanted to become an LPN, a licensed practical nurse, at first, and I was told that I needed to take the CNA course first. I couldn't just skip it. And I'm glad that I didn't, because it's just, I've learned so much. And that was kind of my highest goal at the time. So then I kind of went back to the UAS counselor and talked to her again about, you know, all the prerequisites I would need to become an LPN. And she said to me, well, you know, you're going to need just a few more, you know, to get your bachelor's as a nurse. Why don't you just go and, you know, just go for it.
So is that your next step?
I'm going to say that it is. I'm going to give it a good try, yeah.
Okay. Stephanie. So can you briefly describe the kinds of things that you've studied in this nine-hour bloodbath of training that you've had since September?
We have gone over vast amounts of information. We have learned how the respiratory system works. We have learned about aging, different diseases you get as you get older, how to take care of the elderly. It's just been a whole range that we've gone over since we started in September.
Now, that bunch of training that you went through, was there a part of it that was hard for you? Was any part of it really like tough stuff?
No, I've always liked watching the Discovery Channel or the Learning Channel when they have the medical doctor shows on. So we've had to watch videos with open sores, and none of that seemed to bother me.
Okay. So you made it through the gory part.
I did.
Yeah. You ladies all walked in here together. My experience with a lot of college education is that you learn more from the people in the class than you do from anybody who's up in front of it. Are you kind of a unit now? Do you all hang out together?
We do. I would say we're all pretty close. We started out, I think like any other class, we walked in, didn't know anyone, sat away from each other, and now we all walk in and sit in one big group and talk about our day or what we did the night before. We send emails, text messages, Facebook. So I would say yes.
And if you're smart, you're helping each other out with the
Yes, we are.
Yeah. When somebody's having trouble with the arithmetic, somebody else has got that pretty well handled, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's we call that cooperate to graduate in the military, and it certainly is the way to go. Suzanne, we've talked about all of the aspects, or many of the aspects of this course, certainly not all of them, and maybe we've touched a nerve somewhere out there, and there's someone who is saying to themselves, you know, I kind of wish I could do that. When's the next opportunity?
We are going to be offering two classes beginning January 17th. It's our spring semester. We've the last couple of years just had one class, so 10 students each semester were able to take the class. We have 20 slots opening for spring semester. Half of them are filled at this time.
So there's really only 10?
Yeah, but it always seems to work out if people really want to get in. It seems to work out that everybody makes it in who really wants to be in the class. Mm-hmm. We will have a Tuesday, Thursday class, which will be 5 hours each day, and then we have an all-day Wednesday class, which will be from 8:30 to 5:30, which is a wonderful option for folks that have other employment, have children, have full lives, that they can come in one day. Though it's a big day, I used to teach the full-day class, they have the chance to come and take the course. So we're hoping to reach out and meet traditional students with two half-day classes, and then maybe students that have different needs with a full-day class. The class itself is about 155, 160 hours total in the 14 weeks, and half of that is skills lab and clinical, and half of that is didactic. So it's a nice variety. The students all work in the clinics. They work at Wildflower Court, and they work at Juno Pioneers Home. They start those clinic days at 6:30 in the morning, so they're working a shift, and I think that's when the skills and the theory comes alive, when they actually get to work with folks.
I see nodding heads here. Did you have a comment about that?
Yeah. Not really. It's invaluable. I just wanted to say, becoming a CNA in Alaska, we're some of the highest trained CNAs in the country, and it's just awesome. We've learned so much, and like she said, in the skills. I mean, you read about it and you read about it, and it's like you get there and you actually see it, and then you even learn so much more than you ever thought you would.
This is there's a tremendous demand for CNAs, I think.
There is a great demand. I think it's projected that in the next 10 years, the employment opportunities will increase by about 25% for CNAs in our state. And there's lots of places to work in this city. CNAs are wanted at Wildfire Court, Bartlett, Pioneers Home, Reach, Hope Community, Center for Community, Cornerstone, Hospice and Home Health, other nonprofits.
And that much is interested in the Juneau community.
Right.
The statewide demand is probably as great.
All these places love to get certified nurse aides. The students actually take the course, complete the course with me at the university, and then they have to sit for a state exam, which is really separate from us. That's going to happen in a couple weeks for our students. But they are responsible for knowing how to safely provide 24 different skills. So they learn 24 skills, and as Stephanie said, a broad range of topics are covered. So they're learning about lots of different aspects of health and healthcare.
Okay. Well, let me wish you all, the three of you who are taking the exam. You've already had this this little number behind you. You're gonna give them some tips, are you?
Everything you learn in the classroom is basically will be on the exam.
Take notes.
There isn't any surprises, and I found the state exam to be fairly well orchestrated from what we've learned in class. So Suzanne's an awesome teacher, and she did amazing work with us, and we were able to pass, all of us were able to pass the exam. And so
out of your class.
Good luck to everyone. Yeah.
Okay.
Let me say one more thing. Yeah. We do have at UAS have a 95% pass rate always in our state exams, and generally about two-thirds of my students since I've been at the university are working, and the other third are not working probably because they have other things going on in their lives. But it's just it's a...
Like going on into
going
additional
into
training
nursing,
or something like that.
Just other things happening. So salaries are solid, and CNAs are desired all over the city.
Wonderful. Good luck with the exams. Thanks for coming down and telling us about this program.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement, available at various locations in Southeast.
It's 20 minutes after 3, and you're in tune with KTOO FM. This is Pat Moore, and I'm hosting Juno Afternoon today, and I have three skaters in the room with me here. One of them snuck in at the last minute, and I don't actually have her name, but I'm here with, I'm better off than I thought I was, but Pam Leary's here, and she's brought Lori Ballstad and Sigrid Dahlberg, and the two of them are in the show, I think, that's coming up. Let's turn mics on and talk to these folks. So there's this recital that's coming up Saturday night, right?
Nope, it's Sunday day.
Sunday day, okay.
And the actual recital is going to happen at 2:30, but we're starting with a dessert auction as a fundraiser at 2 o'clock. So we hope everybody comes hungry for yummy desserts that are being made by our figure skating family.
And this is probably going to be at the Ice Arena, right?
It is at Treadwell Arena, that's correct.
Okay. I thought it might be.
Yep. Yeah. That's where we skate.
As opposed to out on the ice on the rivers around here or something like that.
No, we'd be doing a lot of sinking if that were the case right now.
So it'd be synchronized swimming instead of synchronized skating.
Exactly.
Okay.
No, thanks.
Very cold. Synchronized swimming, too.
So you're actually stopping by the studio on your way over for a rehearsal, is that right?
That's right. So. We actually have on Fridays a number of figure skating hours, the first 2 hours, and then we teach a basic skills program on Friday nights and Saturdays. And that's the basics of the Juno Skating Club, is that it's a learn-to-skate program, and we teach tots to adults, older adults included, from very beginning getting on the ice and being comfortable. And many of our skaters go on to play hockey, and some go to figure skating as well.
Lori is here in costume. She's wearing a red, a very short skirt, and a sort of a zip-up top that says Lori Ballstad on it, which makes it very easy to know her name. You're nicely there, and a patch on one side that says Juno Skating Club. So, but you won't be skating in this Sunday, right?
Actually, I will be.
Oh, the whole outfit that I'm seeing?
Yes.
So now she said that you can start their skating program when you're very young. Did you? Are you a graduate of that series?
I did start in basic skills. I started when I was in second grade.
Oh, okay. And now you are?
I am in the pre-juvenile level.
Oh, okay. Okay. And when you skate in Sunday's program, what will you be doing?
I'm just doing a program to make everyone feel happy.
Okay.
She's skating to the music when Christmas comes to town from Polar Express, and she's our last performer on the ice. And she probably won't tell you this, but she just came back from a competition within the figure skating world. It's a regional figure skating competition of 5 states, and at her level, she came in 4th and won a medal, and it's the Juno Skating Club's first figure skating medal, so we're really proud of her.
Yeah, I'm really proud of you, too. Thanks for representing Juno in a regional competition. Was it exciting?
Yeah.
So,
especially when you found out you got a medal, right?
Yeah. And you performed alone in this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone did.
Can you describe, can you give me any idea of what that routine looked like? What did you do?
Well, first off, everyone just kind of went onto the ice, and we all just did our warm-up. We were all just kind of spread out. We were all really, really nervous, and then we all went on one at a time, and probably the most nerve-wracking part is when you're just sitting in the locker room and you're just waiting for your name to be called, and then you go out and you do your program. I skated to the music from Forrest Gump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why did you choose that?
I just found it on my computer, and I really enjoyed listening to it. So.
And did it have rhythms that helped you put together a routine kind of thing?
Yeah.
Something that you thought, oh, I could do this to that. Was that so? You actually choreographed your own.
I choreographed it with the help of my coach, Pam Leary.
Okay, and Pam.
Yes.
When you decide that you're going to choreograph something like this, I understand a little bit about dance choreography, and this is very closely related. But there's another element or two, I should think, in this process. How is it different?
I don't know that it's so different, but in the figure skating world, there is a lot of music that is sort of a natural fit, and judges look to have some fast, some slow. When you do spins, they take a certain amount of time, so you want to have music that goes with a spin, music that goes with a jump, music where the skater that you're working with can interpret well. Some skaters are very fast skaters, some skaters are more melodic, which I think may be different because we tend to choreograph towards the skater themselves as opposed to having a set routine that you're bringing dancers into. So we try to showcase what our figure skaters can do.
Sigrid, you're the president of the skating club.
Yes, the Juno Skating Club is a nonprofit organization with the mission to teach Juno to skate. So we offer basic skills lessons, as Pam discussed, and then we also have our figure skating program. People taking basic skills, some of them continue on into figure skating, some of them continue on into hockey, and some of them just want to be recreational skaters and have more fun when they go out on the lake and learn how to just use their skates better. And I teach the adult classes on Friday nights, and it's so fun to watch people go from barely coming across the ice to the strip where they're going to learn their lesson to just zooming around the rink, going forward, going backwards in a surprisingly short period of time. In the six-week sessions that we teach, people really come a long way, particularly that first session, because they've typically had not a lot of input, and all of a sudden a few critical things are revealed to you, and suddenly you can do things you didn't think you'd ever be able to do. And it's very addictive, as I found out. I started skating as conditioning for skiing, and so I thought, oh, okay, I'll take a class, and then I'm still doing it. So,
doing it, teaching it,
yeah.
Participating in synchronized skating and all figure skating aspects. So
yeah, it's so fun. And in a place like Juneau, where you look at the weather right now, it's miserable out there. You don't have to worry about the weather. If the rink's open, you go in, and there's the ice, and it's perfect. The swimming pool is the only other place in town that's like that, mm-hmm. where you can just, when it's time to go, you show up, and what you need is there, regardless of the weather. So it's really great to have it.
And so if I could,
sure.
while we're talking about the basic skills program, we have four sessions a year. We're in the middle of our second session. We take a break over the holidays, and then we start up again the week of January 9th. So whatever that Friday and Saturday is the first day of classes that we start up again. And you can go to our website to sign up. We have electronic registration, which has proved very, very useful, and there's a discount if you sign up.
And popular, because you can just sign up whenever it strikes you, not when you have to go to the rink and turn in the form. And we've, every year, particularly since we went to the online registration, we've had more people offer this as a holiday gift to someone else. It doesn't pile up, it doesn't get dusty, doesn't make you fat. It's the best gift. You just give someone skating lessons, and they go enjoy themselves, and they take that with them forever.
Lori, do you do any teaching?
I've helped with the basic skill classes a lot. I usually teach in the practice area, and I just help kids have more fun.
Sounds like you're interested in helping people have fun with your number and with the teaching you're doing. Wow. Sounds like a terrific opportunity. You're dancing in the show too, Sigrid?
Yes, I coach the synchronized skating team, and I will be performing with the team in that number.
So times for the show for a Sunday.
So we have our dessert auction that starts at 2:00, okay. and then the actual skating will start at 2:30. We have 22 numbers, most of them solo performances. We do have some group numbers that are going to be performed by figure skating classes. This is mostly for our holiday recital, figure skating based, but we want everybody in the basic skills programs to come and watch and get excited for what they could learn. And so the skating will go from 2:30 to about 3:30, and rumor has it that that jolly old guy in the red suit may show up too for pictures, so oh. right after the recital.
We're hoping the weather's good and he makes it in.
That's right.
I hope so, too. Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming down. Let's go out of this with Skater's Waltz, shall we?
Lovely.
It's 28 minutes to 3, or to 4, and you're in tune with KTOO-FM, Pat Moore, your host for Juno Afternoon. And I have with me two folks at the moment. One of them is Paloma Lopez, who is the translator and spokesperson for Kendril Rinpoche, who is in town to do a series of workshops. Paloma, could you introduce Mr. Rinpoche?
Sure. Kendril Rinpoche grew up in Tibet, and he has been an ordained monk since he was 7 years old. He is the abbot of a monastery where he oversees the care for over 300 monks and 1,000 families in that area. He had extensive training in Buddhist philosophy for over 30 years with his teachers, in which time he also did 3 years of retreat. And he was invited to the United States by another Buddhist master in 2002, and has been teaching and traveling continuously for the last 8 years now. And just last year, he became a U.S. citizen. Hmm. He has a retreat center he started in Arkansas that he's slowly building. And this is, I believe, our 15th or 16th visit to Alaska.
And many of those to Juneau.
Yes.
I receive a set of, I went to one of Mr. Rinpoche's talks a couple of years ago, and ever since then I've been notified when he's coming to town and when things are happening.
Yeah, I have a small mailing list.
And when you gave that talk, it was very different from my perspective, in the sense that we were all sitting around on the floor of the yoga studio in the valley, and you were speaking mostly in your own language, translated, I believe, by Ms. Lopez. Is that, yeah, you were, and after a while, I was able to kind of get my stereo vision so that I could see you and hear her and understand what you were saying. But it was it was much different from what I would think of as a Western address, in the sense that you seemed to be speaking to each individual in the room almost as though you were connected to us. It was a different experience for me. It was quite interesting. When you speak to Western audiences, is the experience for you different than it is when you're speaking to someone in Tibet?
Because the custom and way of thinking, concepts, traditions, and just general personality of the culture is in Tibet versus in the United States are quite different. And for that reason, then, when I teach, I definitely try to meet the ways in which the people, the audience, would hear it in a way that they can relate to.
Does that method, does the necessity to modify the message a little bit so that it fits into the culture, does that weaken or strengthen your ability to communicate what you want to say to the people you're speaking to?
No, chair dung dog nu chair gan dog nu
ja. Je kan sa look through men ra. Look through men ra wa yin sang de ni shi ga ge look through. Ni chue te sen yam dog. Gi de or che ga dog de di shi ga ge nam to kla tem bo she ni. Sorry, the concept is a little difficult. Rimshi said, I think that the teaching really is the same. The quality of what's being conveyed, it's just a matter of the way in which I present the same meaning. And so it's more a manner of presentation than the meaning changing at all.
Is there a key to the nature of Tibetan Buddhism? Is it deeply different from other forms of religious expression?
Yes.
There are many differences. It's hard to just say one, but in general, then when we look at any religion in the world, then many of the religions are focused on belief and just believing and faith. And the Buddhist tradition doesn't focus on faith as the primary component, but rather on an investigation of the way things are through logic and reasoning. And when you arrive at a certainty of that, then they call that faith. And so that's what we're that's what they were cultivating in the tradition, is knowledge. And that's what's being practiced, is after you've investigated and studied, then that's what's practiced. And so then none of the practice is done without that logic or reasoning. Practice not based on reasoning is considered to be flawed. So I do think that there are amongst many very many differences. Then, from this perspective, then my feeling is that Americans are very receptive because they really like that approach.
It almost sounds like a scientific basis.
In many ways, there is a lot, and there's a lot of ways in what the science might study. And in the same way, from the Buddhist perspective, it's investigated and examined. But more profound than they focus not so much on the external objects, but the mind and learning about the mind and how we change our mind, our experience, by working with our mind within ourselves and the logical reasoning and basis for how we can do that.
The Western religious tradition in America is extremely based in Christianity. We are a diverse culture, but at the core of it, there's a wonderful article in this month's National Geographic about how strongly the King James translation of the Bible has affected English common speech, so that we may think that we're not imbued with a Christian sense, but we are, by our very language, by the statements that we make to each other, we almost breathe Christianity. So how does that Christian, it's almost as though we it's part of our inner core. When someone listens to you talk about Tibetan Buddhism, where does that Christian background, how does that fit? What do you do with that?
What do we do with that? I don't think there's really anything that needs to be done. Because then, whatever the case, there are many positive attributes of the Christian tradition and positive qualities which we always respect, and there's no sense of controversy or something that's opposite to that. In general, then, from the Buddhist perspective, there's a respect for all religions and all traditions, and that's honored deeply. So I don't feel that there's any particular conflict nor anything that needs to be changed from the perspective of whatever I'm teaching or presenting to people. Then, for instance, with whatever kind of tradition that you have as a basic and understanding and experience from that, then on top of that, presenting further lines of reasoning according to the Buddhist tradition and so forth, I feel that it only is enhanced, just enhance and continues that growth. And so we start where we're at and continue from there.
Why does Mr. Rinpoche come back to Alaska so often?
Because this Alaska, the weather is cold. I like that very much because I'm coming from Tibet, and then Tibet very very cold, and the lots of snows. Only in United States, the one place look like a Tibetan is here. That's why I choose in the winter, because it's very similar. And the people have time here in the winter, and more people are quiet, and then summer. So summer, people here are very busy, therefore I choose here. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I'm thinking how rare it would be for someone to be complimentary toward Juneau's winter weather. it must be a Tibetan gift to be able to find a Buddhistic gift to be able to find the core of the good part of what we have here. You have quite a community, I think, in Juneau. At the meeting that I went to, there were probably 40 people. How many folks in Juneau are like on that mailing list to the point where they know that I don't know the exact
mailing
number. Is there a large community of folks?
Probably the mailing list. We'd have to guess, but it could be definitely over 100. I would say a couple hundred because we've done several public talks and people have signed up. But of course, sometimes people are in town when we come. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less. It just kind of depends on the timing and different circumstances.
So you're doing a set of workshops this weekend. Can we get the times and the places?
Yeah.
Yeah,
the workshop will be at the
Thunder Mountain
High School Library from upstairs from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. both Saturday and Sunday. And anyone is welcome at any of those times.
Saturday and Sunday at the TMHS Library upstairs from 10 to 12 in the morning and 2 to 5 in the afternoon, and it's both days.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one continuous two-day workshop? Is it all a part of a piece, or do you come to individual pieces of it?
So, although it's open for people to come in at any time, it is a continuous teaching. But within that teaching, then there are different verses of training, and there's always something that someone could gain benefit from at any point. So, then if we weren't there before and we came to a later session, it wouldn't mean we wouldn't understand. Because each one is, there are different sections or verses in the text, and each one has its own meaning or value to us.
So, should people bring anything? Is there a charge?
I think there's a suggested donation. I don't have the flyer, and
But they don't have to pay.
Yeah,
they don't have
but no one would be turned away for a lack of funds. It's always
okay.
Open.
But it is a suggested donation sort of thing. And then it's 10 to 12 and then 2 to 5, so people are expected to go to lunch in the middle of it.
The afternoon also.
And in the afternoon, the three-hour session.
We have
we'll have a break, so it's not too long.
Okay, excellent. And one more time, it's at Thunder Mountain High School in the library upstairs, 10 to 12, 2 to 5, Saturday and Sunday, a break in the middle and breaks throughout the course of the thing. Will we be sitting on the floor?
No. Somebody, if they like to stay on the floor, then they can do it.
Okay.
The more I think of most people stay in the chair, no problem.
Okay. Westerners, some Westerners are uncomfortable on the floor.
I know.
Yeah, we should have started sitting on the floor when we were very young. It would have been much healthier for us. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for coming to our program and telling us about this.
Okay, thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 2nd of December, 2011. It's the birthday of Ann Patchett, born in Los Angeles, 1963, raised in Nashville, published in the Paris Review at the age of 21. She published her first novel, The Patron Saint of Liars, in 1992, which she wrote in 6 months while waiting tables at TGI Fridays in Nashville. She said, "Everybody believed that they were special, that they weren't really a waiter, and that they were the one who was getting out. I had to come to terms with the fact that I was just like everybody else, a girl with a dream and a plate of hot fajitas. You get out not so much because you're special, but because you've got enough steel in your soul to crawl up." Her first big success was Bel Canto in 2001. Most recent novel is State of Wonder, came out this year. It's the birthday of novelist Elizabeth Berg, born in St. Paul, 1948, registered nurse for 10 years, freelance writer for another 10, and then started writing novels. Writes about one book a year. Her most recent is Once Upon a Time, There Was You. It's the birthday of the author, satirist George Saunders, Amarillo, Texas, 1958, grew up on the south side of Chicago, majored in geophysical engineering at the Colorado School of Mines, which, he said, gave him a taste for functionality and efficiency in prose. He said, I really like lean prose, stuff that just does what it's supposed to and gets out of there. George Saunders teaches creative writing at Syracuse University, where he gives his students advice like, any monkey in a story had better be a dead monkey, and the number of rooms in a fictional house should be inversely proportional to the years during which the couple living in that house enjoyed true happiness. Here's a poem for today by Jacqueline Berger, entitled Gin. I like a green olive stuffed with a pimento after it has been submerged for some time in a martini. I like to go downtown with my husband, sit in a booth at the Grand, and let the drink rub the edge off the inane fight we had about the furniture salesman and whether he treated us fairly, my view, or whether he tried to put one over on us, my husband's view. In some moods, we'll fight about anything just to make the other carry the weight of anger we lug all day through our lives. But that moment when we climb into bed on a winter's night, letting our bodies lie down, letting the day be over, is not unlike the way gin loosens the rope, lets float the raft into its stillest waters, happy hour, when the landscape loses its daylight meaning as it slips into the silk of dusk before night pours down its jazzy notes in a cathedral of crushed velvet. We're sitting side by side in the booth, watching the flurry of holiday shoppers come in from the cold. By now, the salesman is a jerk or he's a hell of a guy. Either way is fine. We're talking about anything, having drifted out into the calm plainness of intimacy. Nothing profound, just a place to rest at the end of the day, the cord between us swinging gently after the bells have stopped their ringing. Gin, a poem by Jacqueline Berger from The Gift That Arrives Broken, published by Autumn House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, partners with the National Endowment for the Arts and Poetry Out Loud, a national poetry recitation contest for high school students. More information at poetryfoundation.org. And by PBS, presenting Andrea Bocelli live in Central Park on great performances tonight at 9, 8 Central, and Sunday at 7, 6 Central on PBS. Written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Broadcast support comes from McDonald's, now serving holiday treats, eggnog shakes, peppermint mochas, and peppermint hot chocolate. McDonald's is open daily in the Valley except Thanksgiving and Christmas Day.
It's 10 minutes to 3. You're in tune with KTOO-FM, and my guest on Juno Afternoon now is Libby Stringer, who's the managing editor of the Capital City Weekly. What a wonderful last name for someone who's engaged in print journalism.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's a very fun coincidence.
I hear it's new to you.
It is new. I just got married this year.
Wonderful.
To a Stringer. So.
Yeah. So you're here to tell us about the role that the Capital City Weekly is going to play in this weekend's gallery walk. I guess tonight is the gallery walk.
Yeah, that's
walk,
right. It's actually starting up in about 10 minutes or so. So from 4 to 8 tonight, the Capital City Weekly office will have Santa Claus, the real one, I might add. So anyone's welcome.
I thought he was in that movie about 34th Street. Did you get him in for that?
We booked a special appearance for tonight. So we feel very fortunate, and everyone should come down. And the office is located on Franklin Street right next to the Foggy Mountain Shop. And they're having a sale tonight, too, for Discovery Southeast members. So anyway, stop in. And we'll also have snacks. There's a very lovely spread of food that I just saw them putting together as I was before I walked over here. So have a snack. We're also doing the sidewalk poll. If you've ever seen the weekly, the sidewalk poll is in there every week. And so if you're interested in being in that, come down and answer a question or two. And what else? We have, yeah, the snacks and Santa Claus. And
now you have one of the Christmas trees that's up to
we
be
do.
Voted on, right?
Yeah, we're part of the Downtown Business Association. So we have one of the 12 trees in our charity is Cancer Connection. So
I think everybody understands that, but basically there's a tree in each of 12 businesses downtown, and you go around and look at all of them, and you get a ballot, and then you can vote for the tree of your choice, and whichever tree gets the most votes, as I understand it, then the money that's collected from the businesses goes to the charity that particular business is sponsoring, and yours again was.
That's right, the Cancer Connection.
Cancer Connection. Okay.
So yeah.
So if your tree is voted the most desirable, then
yes.
Cancer Connection gets the cash. And then I understand they're also going to put the rest of the businesses in a hat and draw one more for $100 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think so. They're doing it a little bit different this year than they have in the past, which is great.
Yeah, we had the Downtown Business Association on the show Tuesday.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay. So I had a couple of questions about a weekly newspaper.
Sure.
Over the last, 3 years, we've seen major dailies all over the country basically have to cut back. Some have folded. Print journalism has been really taken a hit, really within the last 5 years or so. And I'm wondering how that's affected a weekly that is pretty much advertising centered, but still carries news. You have a working agreement with the daily newspaper,
yes.
You know, and like that. So how do you stay alive?
Well, it's interesting, and I've been with the Weekly off and on since 2008, end of 2008. So I've seen it change a little bit, and definitely during part of the big recession where a lot of newspapers just went under completely. And our parent company is not one of the ones that went under, thank goodness. But yeah, it's interesting. Print is not, it doesn't serve exactly the same function as it used to. People still read the paper. Our pickups are still good. We also have a lot of online readers. And that's really where a lot of newspapers, including the Capital City Weekly, is putting their focus into the web. And, you know, what kind of web extras can we add on? So I like to think of it as optimistically, not as print is dead, but look at all these new online features that we can, you know, put out there for our readers to enhance the print experience, you know, see the story at capitalcityweekly.com for more or that type of thing. So, I mean, you'll see the staff of most newspapers, including the ones in Juneau, is smaller than it used to be. But there's still a lot of, and especially in a town this size and with such a rich community, there's still a real value to local news being reported on by local people who have connections to these people who are doing really interesting things, artists and athletes and, you know, even the political sector is huge here. So all that with coming to the reader from a local voice, I think, is really important and valuable. So, we're doing the best we can to keep printing the papers, but also with a focus on the online component as well.
How does the weekly open itself to people who want to take part in that voice? How do you make your pages available to someone who wants to say something?
Yeah, well, I wish I had a number, but a high percentage of our content is submitted just by community members from, you know, all the way from Yakutat to Metlakatla and everywhere in between, because we do cover not only Juneau, but the rest of the region. So, the people send in stuff, and I love getting submissions from people. I mean, I've seen very interesting things over the years, you know, that being such a small staff as we are, we can't be everywhere at once. And so that's how we definitely rely on the community to feed us information and tips and send us pictures of their event that we weren't able to make it to and things like that. And, yeah, that's definitely very important to our operation. And, yeah, anyone that has a submission can send them directly to me. It's editor@capweek.com is the email address, or you can drop stuff by our office or give us a call or whatnot. Find us online. And, yeah, we love submissions.
How do you encourage there's a term in print journalism called pass on, which means if I get a paper and I give it to somebody else to read after I've looked at it, how do you encourage that? Is there anything you do to try to make that, to expand your readership that way?
Oh, sure. I'm trying to think how that would apply in our case. I mean, our papers are available all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you see one in a cafe, maybe someone else has already done the crossword puzzle. Darn it. Just like...
They're pretty good crossword puzzles.
I try to pick the real good ones.
As an aficionado.
Yeah. But also, you know, we try to put in things that are lasting. You know, a photo that you would clip up and put on your bulletin board. And actually, I think here in the studio, there might be a couple old news clippings from the Empire and the Weekly of radio-related events. So, you know, just I think a lot of people collect newspaper clippings, and that's something that you can't really do with an online product quite in the same way. Does that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Libby, thanks very much for coming down and talking to us about journalism.
No problem.
Letting us kind of get an idea on what the events are for this afternoon and this evening at the Capital City Weekly.
Thank you.
But the people in darkness saw light in him and hope in the freedom he gave. All of the power in heaven and earth God had invested in him. He was to die on the cross, descending to hell, meet the devil, take the keys from him. Yielded himself to the death on the cross, cried it's finished, then slumped to die.
You're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in Juneau and Douglas, and KTOO also broadcasts on translators throughout the area. We're on K276 AF at 103.1 in the Valley in Auk Bay. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens to us on K201 AM at 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Straits, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9.